What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, it's Yas here, and I'm calling today with a little favor to ask. Over the recent weeks and months, I've had loads of you get in touch with some great questions, and today I'm going to be trying something new with the show. I'm trialing a Q&A segment where I'll be joined by a co-host and elite coach educator, Gerard Jones. Now, these are discussions which are going to be taking place every Sunday evening at 7:30 GMT, live on Twitter Space, if you wanted to get involved directly. Otherwise, I'll be releasing them here every Wednesday on the Coaches Network podcast. So for today's format, it's slightly different, and for around about 30 minutes, each discussion will be dedicated to a question that has been sent in, where myself and Joa will be going into some real depth and sharing our views and opinions on the topic in order to leave you with some key takeaways to consider in your own environments. So the favour I'm asking for today, guys, is if you could let me know your thoughts on the new format, and you can do this by getting in touch on Twitter at TheCoachesNet. Once again, that is at TheCoachesNet. And of course, if you have a question, feel free to send that in too. Hope you enjoy the new format.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Let's dive straight into it. Obviously, you know, we've come to part four now of our series in terms of developing the game model. Talks about what a game model is, talks about how to create one, talks about considerations and influences on it. And obviously, now we're going to be exploring a little bit more in terms of how we go about articulating it, how we share that, and what it looks like. So where does your mind go to straight away?
I'd be curious to ask you, when you're saying articulating it, are you referring to how we explain our game model to the players? Is it to coaches? Is it to everyone?
It's a good question. I think, you know, from a few different perspectives, I think it is. Yeah. Is it the same? Should it be the same across different? Should we differentiate it in any way, shape or form? I think, should the players get a different insight on it than the coaches do? Or is it important for the coaches and the players to understand it in the same ways? Those are a few things that kind of come to my mind straight away around, you know, around articulating the game model in particular, and just considerations and the consistencies across how we communicate that, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when I consider articulating,
what I'd be very keen to know is, you know, how we use in certain terms, what's our language that is easily understood by the players as well as whoever we're working with. So if I'm coaching with you and I'm using certain terminology, do I plan that terminology within my session, or is it just off the cuff? You know, because I think it's often, it's perhaps overlooked, but a real big thing that we should do is obviously when we're planning, no different to plan activities, we're planning the rest and work ratios, we're planning the conditions, the rules, the challenges, hopefully the questions that we're going to ask. I'm not saying you can't deviate from the plan, but, you know, having a plan in place where possible can help us going into something, because we're going to work potentially more effectively. And one of the keys to that plan is having a consistency and a clarity in the language we use. So if I'm working on certain principles, what are the key words? And I stress that a lot. What are the key words that you're going to use that's going to bring about your principles, that's going to communicate what we're going after, that's a way of articulating the game model? You know, so at certain ages we've talked about, and I've used examples of this in the past, like hide and seek. You know, when you're thinking about movements to find the ball and run off the blind side of someone or create space for yourself, hiding and seeking. So running away or finding ways to stay behind and between players, being off the shoulder, so you're hiding. And then you seek is obviously that run to receive to get on the ball. It's playful language, but it's language that as kids we've all done, right? Or empty and fill. So if I'm coaching, you know, a big one of our principles and things we talk about a lot within our model is rotation and balance. So with that, what I'm suggesting is that if I drive into the space with the ball,
sorry,
is somebody dropping in to fill in? And that could be, or if I'm running to receive, if I run forward and I drag somebody out, are you filling that space? So perhaps empty and fill. So I've got many examples. We talked about breaking lines before and things like that. So it's a real key one. Like, what are the key words that you use to articulate? And I think just talking about players initially as well as coaches, that's probably a good place to start.
So just on that then, you know, it got me thinking, do we then have to, you know, one of the considerations be adapt the language to suit the needs of the players? Therefore, when we're articulating the whole thing, do we revise the whole framework based on the language of the players that we're working with?
Well, you could potentially. I don't know if you need to revise everything, because there's a lot of stuff. I mean, I'll take this as an example. I was in a meeting this week with our parents, and there was many things that were being discussed. It was a two-hour meeting, believe it or not. There was a lot of things outside of this topic, but this was one of them. And, you know, I was describing it in a way that I'm not dumbing it down, but I didn't go into the breadth and depth of some of the framework and structure that me and you might talk about, or even the people listening, because me and you and even everyone on the call, we could use certain language, but it might be over people's heads. Even the simplest of terms, which might be simple to us, but it might not be simple to them. And I think that's the same for players. I think it's okay that we might have a very detailed, meticulous and structured process, but perhaps what's really more important is reducing that complexity for the players. The game is complex enough. We don't need to add, and I'm not suggesting that's what you were suggesting either, because you're not, but all I'm arguing is I think it's okay to have really detailed documents. I mean, the stuff that we have, maybe it's too much, but as an example, stuff that I've got with the Federation and things that we've got, the hundreds of pages in depth. But you wouldn't, you know, unload that Bible upon a player. But what you would do is you'd give them little nuggets, and those key words can instantly paint. It's like a picture talks 1,000 words, right? It can instantly paint a picture in the mind of the player. And I think that's where, yes, to answer your question, I think we should use language that's age appropriate or that can be easily understood, that's playful and intentional. I think intentionality is a big thing, right? Because you're priming players to attune to certain information within the environment that's going to help them solve that problem. So we've got to think about what are the game problems that we're wanting to design for the players. You know, even on a match day, I was looking at one of the coaches today, the halftime talk, and I'm thinking about how they're using certain terms that it could have been said a lot simpler, that would have easily described what the problem is that's happening on the pitch. And equally, how can we solve it, or how can they solve it and draw that answer from the players? But the coach overcomplicated it for 2 minutes. So I think one way is, you know, I gave a couple of examples there, empty and fill, hide and seek. You know, I mean, we've used terms like play around, play through, play back. Well, that's easy to understand, you know. Or, you know, another one might be just, you know, even questions, where you're posing questions, but really it's a challenge. And that's another way of articulating your game model. Using analogies, you know, that's a big one. I know we've not spoke much about it, but It's probably a space in itself, an X space episode, but using analogies to explain a situation, I think, is key. And I think that's where you're tapping into the mind of the player, right? Now, there's certain things that we could say when we're working with 10-year-olds that you could, you know, it's great. If you can explain to a 10-year-old, you should be able to explain to an adult. But of course, there are more things that you can say to an adult that be different to a 10-year-old. Do you see what I mean? So I do think it's different. I mean, I was, you know, even in our performance space, I noticed one of the kids loves Pokemon. And it tickled my thing, because obviously I love Pokemon, right? I'm getting into it because my kids are back, you know, into it. It's drawing on my childhood, right? But there's certain things that I could refer to in Pokemon. I did this with the Unites the other day. Kids were obsessed. And I just picked on a Pokemon and one of his powers. And I sort of meant that as a suggestion of, like, what's he really good at? How could you do that in the second half down the outside? But it instantly painted a picture in the mind of a player. Now, for someone else, it might be, you know, exploded out of a movement, or it could be whatever it could be, right? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, again, it just goes back into my question, right? You might want to adapt the language to meet the needs of your players. And I think, you know, if I go back to this idea of the game model, I mean, fundamentally, if we go back to the previous conversation we had, I think one of the key takeaways for me is that we're going to fundamentally have to look at changing and adapting the game model based on the players that we've got. Although might there be some consistent and key messages across the board in terms of the way we want our teams to play. However, I think if we're going to have to adapt it, then it might just be a useful exercise for us as coaches to understand the different ways in which we can express it. Therefore, we understand what the messages are that we're going after. However, the language used in different environments is fundamentally leading into what the game model then presents, if that makes sense. Those are my initial thoughts. I don't know what your take is on that, though.
Yeah, I think it's not a bad shout, is it? Because it is going to be different. I think the context in which you're coaching in, you know, are you 1-0 up, are you 2-0 down? Is it a game that, you know, what's the significance of the game? Perhaps could be an argument, or the level in which is the competition could be an argument. The reason why I say that is because, again, everything is context, isn't it? And it's that could potentially change how you communicate certain things to get your point across. All the time, you know, one thing we should always be thinking about, we've sort of alluded to it, haven't we, is who is in front of us. So if we're really taking a player-centered approach to how we view and play the game, that's got to be the premier question we always ask, is who's in front of us? Because we should have that focus on what are their basic needs, you know, across all ages. So we've got to think about what's their needs in that moment. And regardless of, you know, perhaps certain other things, could it be a case of actually, if I'm working with a 17-year-old, or I'm working with a 10-year-old, or I'm working with a 15-year-old, or whatever the context is, what are their basic needs in that moment? What have we been working on? And then think about that from a social perspective, emotional perspective, physical perspective, and arguably even a cognitive perspective. Because that will, not to try and bamboozle coaches, but if you do have that consideration in your mind, you know, if I'm trying to communicate something whilst thinking about where my players are at physically, or what strengths I can exploit physically, that might change how I word the sentence. Do you see what I mean? Cognitively, well, where they are. You know, I might be working with a 12-year-old, but what if they're a little bit smarter than that? Or what if they're not as? You know, there's some teenagers where it's still like talking to a child. Or you'd get, you know, I'll use my boy as an example, my 5, soon-to-be-6-year-old, sometimes the way he's talking, I mean, you know, I'm having conversations with him. I'm talking to him like an adult, just because he's challenging me in different ways. And some kids need that, don't they? You can talk to him differently. So where are they at cognitively? So I think those are a huge sort of things to think about as a coach. But then ultimately, you know, the language that we use, well, what's the game moment? So really, we can often really overcomplicate what's going on. But if we're trying to communicate the game model, whether that be in a training session setting, whether that be in a meeting, whether that be in a match, whether that be at halftime, post game, pre game, you know, what's the scenario? Well, we should be thinking about what are the moments that we're trying to highlight more to gear us up for success. So, is it an attacking moment? Is it a restart? I mean, kickoff's probably one of the most forgotten set pieces, to be honest. But it's something that you could communicate your game model in. What's your principles on a kickoff? You know, it's funny how off the cuff I've had to step in a couple of times recently through different reasons, like teams have got to finals and there's been a clash, so someone needs to coach that game at 3 while there's another game on at a similar time, or someone's missing and I've got to step in or whatever. And one of the first things I've done, alongside obviously getting our shape right, who's playing where, what we're doing, and then the focus of our in possession, out of possession done, is I've been telling all the teams, yes, I've been going, right, when we play a kickoff, I want you to knock the ball forward and dribble at them, attack them on the kickoff, just go forward. I've not worked on it in training, but as a principle, we want our teams to play forward off kickoff, not necessarily pass the ball back and invite pressure in our own half. And it's funny, every game, just been doing it randomly. And two of the three games that I've done it, we scored straight off the bat. The others we nearly did, but we end up with a corner in their half. Now, can you imagine psychologically, you started a game and you immediately defended a corner? It's something different, isn't it? So, you know, what moments, I'm just giving that an example, what moments are you highlighting? Is it a restart? Is it a set piece? Is it the obvious one would be in possession, out of possession, to articulate your game model? And then obviously, depending on the age and stage, you've got to go into certain details, aren't you? You know, for me, if I'm really wanting to articulate that when we've got the ball, you know, what's our shape look like? Well, your sub-principles are your height, your width, your depth, your optimal distances between players. You know, where a player's positioned in order to create that structure. How we're going to, well, how do you articulate that visually to the players, never mind anything else, you know, to help them know where they can stand and where they can move to create problems for the opposition. So I think it's something that's very important, isn't it? It comes back to my earlier point, the keywords. What keywords are we using?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. It takes my mind to think, all right, well, I remember an experience when I was working in an academy a couple of years back, and the coach was really, really good at, you know, getting the principles across, but in language that suited the players' needs and suited, it was easy to understand for the players. It comes with your Pokemon analogy, right? If that's the world they live in, then give them the language in the world that they live in and the world that they understand. Because essentially, as long as we're landing the messages, that's the key piece, right? It's not about what the term is or what the phrase is per se, as long as the message is consistent with what we want to try and get across. But no, I think some good stuff in there in terms of, right, obviously, you know, putting them in a frame of mind of how can this look in through our eyes? How can this look through our eyes, right? And understanding what the players understand from the language is really key within that. So I guess, you know, one of the things that it makes me think about is how much information do you give them at what stage of the journey around the game model, and, you know, where does that, how you know, how do you layer it on? Is it just terms to start with? Is it terms and definitions? Is it terms, definitions, and much more, if that makes sense?
Well, of course, I think terms is key. And having clarity on what we mean. I've given examples before, I've mentioned it many times, right, where, you know, the buzzword was counter-pressing. And the one of the environments I was last in England, and the coach was saying to me before the session, hey, you know, we've been working on counter-pressing for 6 weeks, you're going to love it, you know, watch this. And I'm watching the players, I'm going, I'm not seeing much counter-pressing going on. And then, obviously, I asked that question, hey, just talk me through, what's your definition of counter-pressing? And long story short, it was completely different to what I would. And then, between all of us, I was head of coaching. He was the under-16s coach. You know, that night, the under-18s was down coach. It was the PDP lead. You had the academy manager, etc. Every one of us had a slightly different definition. So what chance have you got? And I think it's data just paints a huge picture, which is, you know, we can say certain terms, but how do we know they're understood by the players? How are we checking for understanding? And there's a lot in that. I mean, you know, you look at heuristics, and I mean, it's a technique, isn't it? But the brain works in quite cool ways where if you just think of heuristics, we can use certain words and the brain will solve problems very quickly just by attaching meaning to certain terms, whether it's a one or a two word sort of bullet point, if you like, that enables them to make educated guesses, solve problems, predict, have a visual of understanding that picture, that problem. So that's probably a good place to think about, where we know that there's theory there. What if we use that term? You know, I'm building on the examples I made before. If it's line breaking, if it's, you know, empty and fill, if it's press position, pass position, whatever terms are in your club, right? These certain terms, are you showing that in the practice? Are you attaching challenges with that? Are the players able to demonstrate and show you and check that off as they're achieving it? Could there be some notational data to it, so we're able to review it in a practice and see, okay, we've talked about this principle. This is the key word we're using to describe this principle. You know, for example, I hear a lot of clubs use this word now, jumping, when they're talking about that pressing action, right? And I believe it originally came from basketball. And I've heard people talk about, like, full court press. Well, that's a basketball term. And this is used in England. You'll hear Liverpool talk about jumping, when to jump. Well, does everyone know what that means, jumping? Or are they going to take you literal and start jumping up in the air? Now, I'm being tongue-in-cheek, but it's a point, isn't it, Yaz? Could you show them, and is everyone on the same page of what jumping means, if that's a term that we're using to describe that behaviour that we're trying to expect from the players? So I would say, to layer it and to develop it, it's using those terms frequently and consistently, showing what it means in action, finding moments to create a pause and capture a moment within the practice, whether that be with a video, whether that be the old school fashion freeze, and that's a good moment, and it's everyone and they can see it, or whether it's an individual thing, or having players show it to you and they replay those moments, and then you're consistently using that language that you've built, and then you're reinforcing it on a match day. So during the match plan, they can see it and they can feel it. Because a lot of, we don't often talk about that, but feel, you know, we're talking about articulating a game model. The game's based on feel, and when you feel, when you sense something, isn't it, to make those decisions. So describing those actions is really key. And then I would say, on the match day, thinking about these three I's: inspire, involve, and inform. So I'll mention it again: inspire, involve, and inform. Often as coaches, we do this a lot. We inform, we tell, we communicate, we show. But how well do we inspire, and how well do we involve players? So finding ways to have them talk to us using our terminology, and I say ours as in ours, the players, we have to own it collectively. It can't just be mine as a coach, but, you know, they're not talking the same language. It has to be ours. There's that buy-in. And then having them and even the parents involved in that process, or in different ways, right? And I've done it before where I talked about tracking runners. And then I explained to the dad what I meant by tracking runners. And I just gave it as an example of, hey, in the first quarter or first two quarters of the game, can you just watch how many times Dan tracks his runner? And the dad did it on his iPhone. He just notationally, they analysed the game. Now, obviously, it's not going to be 100% accurate, but it's fairly, because he's only watching his son. But it highlighted a moment of, like, oh, there's times where he's not tracking his runner. He's just letting him get past him. And that was important. So now you could use that to develop a conversation, right? But you're going to also develop clarity around that terminology and what it means in certain situations. So, you know, they're just a couple of things that spring to my mind when we're thinking about this, is how old do we... Yes, you have to inform people. You have to share information, resources, whatever. But how well do you inspire? So using the game as a reference, drawing from matches, sending them homework, having them watch the game, like watch the Man City versus whoever game, watch this club, watch this particular player, study how he does this. Because now you started to use those as visuals and draw from best practice, right? And then how well can you involve them in that process? Because if you involve, you know, tell me I forget, show me I remembered, it's all that type of stuff. Tell, show, do, right? Now, I mean, it's there for a reason.
Yeah, nah, do you know what? My mind's gone straight to the idea of asking the question, should the game model be more player-led then? You know,
should there be what? Sorry? Could you repeat that one?
Should the game model then be more player-led?
It's a great conversation, isn't it? It's opened it up, hasn't it? What does everyone's thoughts in the room think?
I think it's an interesting one because, right, you know, fundamentally what we're saying is there'll be like... We're letting the players explore it. And it takes you back to the first question. Do we even need it? If it's going to be player-led, then it's not really our game model, is it? It's just a preference based on how we want to play. But fundamentally, we go back to the idea of, right, we're going to have to do what the players feel is right in the moments, and that makes sense. I mean, if that makes sense in any case. And I think, you know, using the visuals is really key, right? Because I'm straight away, my mind's gone to the idea of my own coaching kind of philosophy or approach to coaching is that, you know, I work on three pillars, and one of the pillars is show and tell, so everything's got to have a visual reference to it, in which case it's, I guess, more about them gauging and understanding of what it is we're going after. And in terms of articulating that game model as well, it's getting them to show us examples and understanding of what it looks like from their perspective, and maybe just differentiating that and clarifying that based on what we actually want to see. But yeah, my mind's ticking right now. I don't know what your thoughts are, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to know from anyone listening in the room, you know, anyone, wherever you are, we've got some rich experiences, whether that be Tony, whether that be Paul, you know, David. Look, it's really interesting. You're
cutting out, mate.
I'm sorry, I hope you can hear me now. Yeah. Can you hear me now? I was just saying, I'm really interested to hear from everyone in the room, whether that be Tony, whether that be Paul, Chris, working in the girls' game, David, working in the grassroots game and behavioural science background. I mean, everyone really. It's because we're all going to come at this from different lenses, I guess. You know, and I think to answer your first question, I think you need a model because it's a framework. So, if I look back at when we started coaching, if we're really honest with ourselves, did we have a very clear identity in how we wanted our teams to play? And then and was it clear that, well, the way we were coaching was linked to how we wanted to play? We might think it was, but how good was it? Now, having a very clear identity in how we want our teams to play is going to help us think about how we're structuring our practices to improve not only team performance, but obviously individual performance. So having a framework and principles gives us that idea of, hey, what are the things that are important for us? I think that is a good place to be. But then to the point of the player-led, well, the game belongs to the players. So I think we're there to provide that guidance and that skillful probe and prod. But ultimately, they've got to be able to do it, haven't they? But we have to create an environment where they feel the confidence to make decisions, you know, and try things. I mean, you know, it's, and if we were asked coaches, you know, what's your game idea when you've got the ball, would they be able to articulate it well enough? We're talking about articulating the game model. Can the coaches do that well enough? It'd be interesting, wouldn't it, to ask?
I think so. I mean,
most probably couldn't. So then if they can't explain it to me and you, how are they going to be able to explain it to players? How are players going to be able to articulate it?
I think so.
You know, so that's a just finish on that note. That's an important one for me, because when I think about attacking, when we've got the ball, I want my teams to dominate by moving the ball forward. You know, quick tempo, high intensity, and I want to be unpredictable in how we do that. I don't want to be predictable. Well, because of that has a huge influence on how we coach our sessions. where we want our players, you know, someone commented on it the other day. From fortunate, we had several people watching us in a final, and they were seeing defenders do things that normally most people might not see. I'm not saying it was anything revolutionary, because it's not. It's probably been done before. But it's different behaviours to what they typically see, where it's like you'd see more structures. Well, a lot of that's because let's be unpredictable. Let's not always attack the way we think the opposition thinks we're going to attack. You know, we're traditional in our thinking. Can we try something different? Because you don't know if it's going to work. You have to be unpredictable, you know. So, but not everyone might think that way. Some people, when we talk to them, Yaz, and you'll agree with this, you know, and you'll ask them and you'll say, hey, I've heard you tell me that you want players to be creative and you want this and you want that, but what about in this area of the field? And they always go, no, not there. Oh, well, you can have a little bit of freedom here and total freedom in the final third. Why can't it be freedom all over the pitch? Well, no, you can't do it. You know what I mean? So now it's okay, and that's fine, right? They're all, you used that word before, right? Preferences. Well, that's going to shape how the game is played by your players.
And I don't think that's the end of the world. I think the key thing is how well are you aware that your preferences are actually linked to what's influencing the players, right? And how open and inflexible and adaptable can you be based on that? How stuck are you on how you want the team to play and what the game is actually demanding in the moment, right?
Part of it. 1,000%. And the unintended and intended consequences. Because there's unintended consequences with the way I want to play, right?
Mm. And I think you're spot on. And I think it's just, you know, having an awareness of that, right? And being conscious of those variables that exist. But I think in terms of, you know, obviously bringing that message to light, I think it's just really key to understand that your players need to have, I think, yeah, it's just making me think more and more, you know, should it be player-led or should it be, as you, you know, often say, you know, co-designed in terms of how we want to play some key principles. And I think you're right. You know, you might want to... Yeah, you might have some principles that you want to follow, but actually...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The game's principles come above all else, and I think there's a really key thing in there. Put your hand up.
Sorry, yeah, because I know Tony's up there as well. It's just something you asked there, and I'm throwing it back out there. Maybe Tony's going to answer it. So you've said, hey, player-led. Should it be player-led? And maybe is it, or can it be both? Can it be both? Which comes back to the co-design piece.
Nah, spot on. Tony, welcome. Good evening, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Usual good stuff. Kind of what you were just talking about a few minutes ago made me run out into my quiet room and jump on. I think that even in the title of tonight's space, articulating your game model, is that yours, the coach? Is that yours, the club? Is that yours, the team? Is that yours, the players? I think there's a lot around that. And again, I find myself agreeing with Yaz quite a lot with regards to game models and everything else, because none of us, I suspect, are in a situation where we get to select the players that would fit our ideal game model. So this goes across to Gerard's point in that there has to be a certain amount of co-design, if you like, or certainly cooperation, because I know Paul's on the call, and I'll use I'll use Man United, if I may, as a great example of a really clear game model over the last 20 years to a game model, you know, fast wingers, your Copples and Hills, your Kanchelskises, your Giggses, to a team now that I, you know, maybe this is my ignorance, I don't spot a game model with that particular team. I'm sure he's got one, but for the life of me, I certainly can't work it out. But then again, is he able to recruit? I'm just using United as an example because I think they're a clear one. You know, is he able to recruit the players that he wants, or is the fact that the Man United way is no longer a thing? And that maybe fast, tricky wingers are no longer a thing. So, you know, there's little bits of both of what you've said, which I feel are really valid. And it does give us, if you like, both sides of the argument. You know, if someone was to say to me, you know, what type of game do you want your team to play? And I'm sure everybody would probably answer the same way. And if you put it in inverted commas, it kind of tells you where I'm coming from. It's the beautiful game. But what's beauty to me might not be beauty to you. Nobody would ever accuse a Dave Bassett Wimbledon or Sheffield United of playing the beautiful game. But you could certainly argue that they played a successful game. Now, I know that that's at a different level, but, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, totally. I think it's an interesting one because the thing is, you say, you know, you make the comparison between the beautiful game and maybe the successful game. But I think it comes back to the game, right? Like, we can all have a way in which we want to play, but we're all here for the same thing. And it's to penetrate, it's to attack the oppositions, outscore them and stop them from outscoring us. So I think when we go back to that, it's you can make it as beautiful, quote unquote, as you want. But actually, nothing is more beautiful for me than actually trying to get success and win the game. Like, at times, beautiful means it has to be done in a dirty way. Now, you're right, it's subjective in terms of what beautiful means. But I think it's the best phrase to maybe utilise is, are you playing an effective one? Because if it's effective, then it could be either or and or.
Yeah, listen, I think you're absolutely right. And I've always, because of the sort of the level that I've worked at, you know, I've worked in the pro game, but unfortunately not at, you know, at the very highest levels, whatever reason, me, location, lack of ambition, call it what you want. But there's a certain... I guess there's a certain amount of settling for what you're given. You know, if your scouts are going out and bringing in a certain type of player because you're at a League Two club where what is valued are 6'2", 16-year-olds who've got broad shoulders and can put themselves about a bit, or whether you're at Man United, Man City, Liverpool, where you've got the pick of the world's talent, and you've also got longer to develop them because, you know, you're not dictated to by the calendar and how many players that you're allowed to have in your squad, and you can play down and you can nurture over a period of time. Like, again, like United did perhaps with people like Scholes and that, who maybe became players despite their 16-year-old limitations. You know, we're given a set of players. Our first team managers, our academy managers are being told, you know, don't sign anybody that's shorter than 6 foot. And having watched a lot of League One and League Two football over the last 10 years or more, you know, you don't see that many players playing at those levels in the pro game who don't conform to that particular model. So that then, whatever your own feelings on the game are, that is how you then have to build your teams. If you're being directed as opposed to being able to direct.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. I think, you know, it's just
It is recognising where your players are along the journey and what information they may need, right, in terms of where they're at in their education around the game and what that looks like. But I think having the preference is great, but I think it kind of just takes my mind back to, have they understood the purpose and the principles of the game in the first place, so that you can then layer these individual bits on around different elements of the game and how you want them to operate based on the team that you're playing and how that might look against different opposition and how it might look like in different moments of the game. And I think one of the... It reminds me, actually, going back to the youth mods. And one of the biggest things, the biggest messages that it was driving home on the youth mods when I did them anyway, was the idea of using scenarios in your sessions and how you deliver those messages so that players understand, actually, yeah, there is principles, but there's different ways in which you're going to have to play based on the scenario that you're playing in the game, right? So that was, it just kind of took my mind back to that point. And, that's probably where the first time it really started to make me think, actually, that's a great point, because, yeah, you might have a way of playing. You might want your team to play in a certain way. You might want your players to do certain things. But actually, when they're 2-0 down with 10 minutes to go, that might have to go out the window a little bit. Or if they're 2-0 up and there's 10 minutes to go, that might have to go out the window a little bit. But no, I think it's a great point. Joe, I don't know if you've got any other takes on that.
I agree with everything that's been said, by you and Tony. I think it's just fascinating, isn't it? And it just draws me back to what I was trying to mention before, especially with the scenario stuff you just talked about then. That old tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I learn. Well, if you're involving them in scenarios and you position it so that they have to figure that out. And we have seen it, haven't we? Like when we've done certain scenarios where I used to love it. You talked about the youth awards, even on the AYA, when we'd bring, they'd bring teams in and they'd do like the festivals or whatever and like the round play, and there'd be different types of rules. And we've done it before where it's, let's say you win your game on this field 2-0, the next game you're 2-0 down. Or it could be you're 2-0 down with X number of minutes to go, or it could be whatever. Or you're playing with a man off, or you, different problems, right? Or they're pressing you in a certain way, and how do you respond to that? And it's putting those sort of issues in the players' minds, isn't it? Those game problems. I think it's excellent. It's a great way of, I'd probably rephrase articulating to communicating the game model to meet the players' demands in that moment, because really, anything that's a model, it helps us to conceptualize and understand different moments, what might go on, but how it looks is going to be different every time, isn't it? So we can all talk about, how we play forward, but playing forward in itself is going to look very different depending on the age and stage you're working at, the format of the game, whether it's, my little three-year-old's playing 3v3 right now. So their way of playing forward is just crash it and run and dribble and kick it and whatever and chase. Versus it fits the 5v5 model, or whether it's 7v7, 9v9, 11v11. They're different, aren't they? And then also the domain in which you're operating in, whether it's grassroots development or performance, the context and the stakes on the line, if you like. Like knowing that you're so many minutes away from a final, but you've just conceded. What if you're down, but if you equalise, you're going to take it to PKs. I've seen teams where we went 1-0 down in the semis, and obviously you want to win the game if you can, but we knew we didn't have the quality. We're just hoping we could score on a counter. It never happened, but we got it back to 1-1 and we took it all the way to PKs, But having that in your mind where you're getting so close, it's like, right, let's just make sure we don't concede another. Players will respond to that behaviour, isn't it? So I think these are excellent. These are excellent discussions, and hopefully it inspires coaches to think about how they're designing environments or how they're designing how they're going to interact with players on a match day to elicit and change behaviour. Improve behaviour. That's all when we're coaches, it's all about player behaviour, isn't it? That's what we're trying to improve.
100%. Just a Gerald on that, just to want a quick reminder of everyone. Obviously, it's an FACPD space. Do you want to just share some information on how they can actually get access to those? I would register for obviously the past sessions and this month as well.
Yeah, so we'll share the questionnaires we've done, and it's been incredible, these spaces, because, you know, we've seen thousands of people engaging with them, and several, many people getting CPD added to the profile. So if you're looking to get some CPD added onto your fan profile, just make sure when we share you the link, you spell your name right for a start, right email associated with your fan account, and the correct fan number. If you're looking to add this as part of your FA Football Learning, England Football Learning CPD account, and then obviously we can get that added to your fan profile. This is accredited for an hour CPD, and this leads into our game model series that we're doing as part of a webinar. That's a 2-hour series as well. So we'll share the Google form. It's a short form that normally takes a couple of minutes to complete, and that'll allow you to be eligible for any CPD if that's what you're seeking.
Awesome, awesome. Just conscious, obviously, you know, we've still got a little bit of time left. Don't know if anyone wants to maybe add anything or share any insights or have any questions at this point. But Tony, actually, I've got a question for you. While people maybe are thinking about doing that. Obviously, you've been around for a little while doing this stuff. That we call coaching. When did this idea of a game model first come into play for you? You know, what were your initial thoughts on it?
Do you know what? I can't remember a point where it became a thing. It was, you know, I started coaching. I came out of the army in 2002. I was lucky enough to be able to get a job working at a pro club straight away. I'd only done coaching in the army before that. And for me, maybe I'm wrong, but it only seems to be something that's come around in the last 5, maybe 10 years. I think even 10 years would be stretching it a little bit. So I don't know whether it's the rise of the foreign coach, the influence of the European coaches coming over here and supplanting, you know, British coaches at the highest level. It was certainly, I've mentioned this before when we've done Twitter Spaces, when I first started at Rotherham United in 2002, there was no talk then of this is our game model. It probably came around with the ECCC, if I really think about it and dig back into my memory. So 2012, 13, when we started having to write academy performance plans and policies for this and policies for that and common language to be used in the football club, which is kind of what Gerard was talking about earlier on, making sure that the vocabulary was consistent, not just across the club, you know, but across the different age groups. And I think that's kind of then what separated the junior section of football, if you like, you know, the academy side of it from the first team side of it. Because I remember working with one first team manager who is a pretty outspoken guy, and I think Gerard will perhaps know who I'm talking about, who's just returned to a club, who wasn't interested in that kind of thing at all. We had a training session one day alongside the first team with the under-18s, and the youth team goalkeeper did as we expected him to do. He caught a long ball, he rolled it out to the full-back, and this manager went absolutely apoplectic. And if you've ever seen him in action, you'll know what sight that can be. And, you know, so the academy game model at the time didn't marry up with whatever the first team game model was, if indeed they had one, which was to launch a ball 70 yards, play off the big striker. But he was successful with that. So, you know, again, it go back to who's right and who's wrong.
It's all preferences and perceptions, right? So, no, great conversation so far. Paul, good evening. How are you, man?
Hi, guys. Yeah, interested listening in. I'm sure Everybody needs a vision of the game, how they see it played, and I suppose that's what they're calling a game model now. And with so many people involved, it's important you have it all down. But if we're not careful, I'm not hearing what's behind the game model. The game model surely is for the enjoyment of the players, the challenge to win the game. That's the game, what we're trying to get within it. So I don't hear or see enough of the craft of football. The craft, where does it drill down to the craft of outwitting your opponent, outplaying them? You know, well, where is that within it all? I'm sure it's in there underneath, but to me, that's the first thing that should be in the middle of it. Whatever we're doing is in order to outwit our opponents individually, collectively, you know, together as a team. So in all of it, that should be the question. Whatever we're doing, how are we outwitting the opponent? And that's what I'd like to sort of press a little bit more. You know, how are we doing that by positional play? Are we playing on the shoulder? Are we looking blindside? Are we looking at the defender's head? What's the connection between the two players? Does he come short to go long? You know, backing in. Can you back in and hold the ball up? And the first time set then puts is the trigger for the runners in behind. All those sort of things, which they've got to be the details inside, if you're calling it a game model, they've got to be there, because otherwise, if not, you've got a shell, but you haven't got the detail that makes the difference for the players. And in that sense, does your game model drill down to the player's eye view? Because it's them that's playing the game with their capabilities against the other players. So can they see that pass? Can they deliver that pass? Are they connected? You know, is the winger connected with the fullback? Do they know each other's runs? So you see, like Saka, well, you know, if the fullback gets the ball, he's making a little dart inside and he plays a little diagonal run to lose his man. All those little details, you know, that has to be in your game model, if that's what you're calling it. And when you very first start off, I don't know about you, but we didn't have a game model when we were playing Wembley singles, Wembley pairs, but it was one against eight. So you had to be crafty. So you had to stand in front of the goalkeeper when they shoot, stick it in, goal hanging, or at the far post when he knocks it out. Or you'd have to bend it round three players because they're in the way, or through someone's legs. You know, there's all that sort of craft that I think needs to be the real starting point for your game model. You know, otherwise you'll have it, but they won't know how to take advantage of it.
So I'm just listening to you speak there, Paul. First of all, thanks for sharing that. And it's just making me think, go back to my initial thing. Do we even need one? Or is it just about helping the players understand get a real deep understanding of the principles of play and how it looks like for them? Does that make sense? You hear what I said there, Paul?
Sorry, missed that.
So I was just saying, so, you know, first of all, thank you for sharing what you have. And I think it just takes my mind back to the idea of, do we actually need a game model then? Or is it just about helping the players get a real rich understanding?
I think you've got a game model in your head, haven't you? You've got a vision of how you want certain parts of the game to play. But my point is, that depends on how you're going to outwit the opponents on the day. So each game will be different. You know, you might have a general way of playing, but there's certain things, yeah, they'll come up as regular patterns that you'll want to do, but they won't come to fruition if the intention of the players isn't to outwit their opponents. You know, you won't just do it off a plan. They'll have to adapt that plan depending on what the opposition are doing, how quick they're getting closed down. Does that mean they pause, play a little 1-2, run blindside? They've got to have all that inside it. You know, now if you're drilling right down, which the best game model should do, it'll drill right the way down to those things so that you can work your game principles or what have you to each situation. So I've tried to do this now because you've got a lot of the game plan ideas. So the highest sort of level of game plan I'm just saying is, can we get the ball to flow up the pitch close enough to make it flow in the goal? And we might have to connect. So each connection then But while we're doing that, we're going to have to outwit the opponents. So how do we outwit the opponents using flow? Well, it might be positional play to open up and play a pass between, or it might be a run across the front, which then gets the pass inside. Or it might be a clever 1-2 where you bring the opponent towards you and then go against their flow. So you've got to have right down to the detail for each interaction, each situation, because each connection, you've got to move up the pitch, whether it's a 60-yard pass and the centre forward brings it down on his chest or he flicks it on. You've got to have the skills and the cunning to do that. Who was it? Someone scored a great goal the other week. I think it was a youth game I saw. You know, the goalkeeper, he hit it out towards the centre forward. He flicked it on. They went clean through. Now, that's great skill as well, you know, but he was clever the way he held off the centre half. So it's all those little craft things that need to be inside your model. If you're not coaching those, you know, your model will be, it'll get you so far, but they've got to, when it comes to that 1v1, the 2v1, the 2v2, they've got to be able to outwit their opponent.
Yeah, so I mean, again, it takes me back to that same piece, right? If they've got a rich understanding of the principles of play and what they do within that process to make it more effective and efficient, then that will inform the game model, right? And obviously, right, you're absolutely spot on in terms of being able to outwit the opponent, and you're actually spot on in terms of being and having a preference in terms of we've already got a vision of how we want our teams to play. But fundamentally, that will be dictated by A, the game state, and not necessarily just what we want all the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it goes right back to outwitting the opponent. So if I'm against Kyle Walker, I'm not trying to run him on the outside. No chance. But I might stop and start, jink, and then draw him in and then play a 1-2 and get the ball in quick before he recovers. So with what I'm saying is each one, you've got to have a craft for that. So if that needs to be the base level of your game model. And it needs to be the base for it, the foundation.
Yeah. No, spot on. And I think it just reminds me, just to reiterate, just how important those principles of play are and helping the players understand that before obviously building onto the individual bits and what that looks like. And that key piece that, you know, that I always go back to in my own journey is understanding the difference between the what and the what if. Like you said, if you've got a Kyle Walker, you're not going to run him on the outside, are you? And if you are trying to do it, there's going to have to be a strategy and a system in which, or a process in which you're going to go about to try and get that moment to it happen in the game against the Kyle Walker, if you like. So that's some great stuff there. Gerard, any final thoughts from you before we look to wrap up?
This is really important. I mean, fantastic discussions and amazing insights from Tony and Paul and just everything that has been shared. So take the time to keep listening back. I know I will. And I just want to draw back on the points I made before around key words. You know, I love how, again, we're just in an example there between, you know, Paul and Tony speaking. You take Paul's examples, you know, out with the opponent, outplay, outthink, and then flow. He uses flow a lot in his vocabulary, you know. So there's something there, isn't there? Around how you're designing certain keywords that bring about the game to life, brings the game to life for the players. But the piece that's really important is obviously how can the players be more game responsive? So it's not a framework or a model that doesn't take into account context. It's actually, well, how that's done in action can change because the game is unpredictable. So you need to think about who's your direct opponent. And how are you going to solve that game problem? So I know I think it's good. And then it did get me thinking that I've always said this for years. I actually stole it from a guy when I was doing my PGC in Huddersfield around like 2014-ish. And he said, how well do you know the history of your subject? And it's just stayed with me. And so when Tony was talking about, you know, when was it sort of introduced? When did it come in? It just made me start thinking, like, when was the first time I heard the term or saw something similar? And I think a lot of these things have probably been around for a while. A lot of it's influenced from academia, isn't it? You know, especially when you talk about, you know, tactical periodization and frayed and several people, right, that have influenced the game. Tony's right, a lot of the foreign influence. I know there's a lot of research that, you know, even I've seen. I remember, I don't know if it was Piggott or Ashford. I've got in my mind where I remember seeing something around sort of 2012 or 2014 where it might have been a basketball model for talking about the moments of the game and then the sort of words associated with those moments. And it's just fascinating. It just got me thinking, well, you know, how can you use this to understand your players better, understand how you can coach better? You know, that's where I'm sort of going. I'll leave the room with it, is have a think about how well do you know the history of your subject? Can you look deeper into it if you really want a deep dive? You know, whether that's drawing on detailed plans and models and frameworks. I love that book when you look at, I don't know if you remember it, Yaz, Inverting the Pyramid, and they talk about the history of football. But it's fascinating how a lot of things do come back, you know, and you look at sort of shapes and structures and patterns and problems that historically it's not new. You know, it will have existed in the 60s and beyond that, but it's coming back, isn't it? As you know, so I think that's a great one, is if you want to articulate your model, well, you need to first understand what is it and how do you coach and operate, what underpins that, and to understand it deeper, maybe do a deep dive in history, look at old games, look at things that you can do that's different, and adapt that to the players you're working with. Comes back to who's in front of us. So yeah, really enjoyed it.
No, definitely. You just got me thinking. Yeah, I just remember when I did my A-lessons many years ago, they literally talked about the same thing. You know, just, yes, there's going to be trends that are taking place, but not all of these trends are necessarily new. They're being recycled. And, you know, we've seen, you know, back in the day, would you see a lot of 4-4-2, and slowly, one, you know, slowly a couple of teams are now bringing that back into play. And, you know, the 4-3-3 goes in and out, the 3-5-2 goes in and out, like all these different things, they go, you know, they go in swings and roundabouts, right? It's just looking at when and what's appropriate based on the game. And then obviously as the game develops, it's always going to be something which counts, is it? But the thing that counts, is it not necessarily new things, it's things that have been brought back from the past, if that makes sense. So now I think it's a great point. How well do you know the history of your game or your subject, right? Great point, Gerard. Guys, again, just a quick reminder, it is an FACPD spaces session here. So you can get an hour CPD for completing the post-discussions reflection task, which Gerard has posted in the comments section. Please make sure you're following us. Make sure you're getting involved in all the conversations going forward, whether you're just here to listen, whether you're here and you want to share some ideas or thoughts, or even just maybe get in touch, let us know if there's any questions or topics that you want to have discussed on the space sessions in particular. We're open to feedback, we're open to thoughts. And I think most importantly, it's just great to see, again, some new faces on the conversation. You know, Gerard mentioned earlier on, we've had a few thousand coaches now across the last maybe 18 months or so that we've been doing this, engage with us, and I think it's always great to see more. So please keep following us, please get in touch, let us know your thoughts, please share the spaces, and we'll be back next week, guys. Take care. Well, there you have it, guys, another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.